Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Bald Men on Campus, an ESPN podcast hosted by Jay Billis, LaPhonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. These ESPN basketball personalities give you an all-access pass inside the world of college basketball, talking to the biggest names in the sport. That's Bald Men on Campus. Listen wherever you get your podcast. Also, we are so excited about our new weekday studio show, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, tipping off the start of the NBA season with exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinne Agumake, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today. 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap, and also as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, I'm going to try to figure out exactly what it is that Enes Kanter is doing. Also, your family holiday stories. But first. Hey, man, shout out to my man, Jeremy, down there in New Orleans. Made a very interesting point. He said the Braves won the World Series, the Saints on a 4-game losing streak, and Oklahoma lost their coach. I must be on cloud 9. Take it another level, brother. Texas A&M is still going to have Jimbo Fisher as their coach. I got all kinds of things to be excited about. Yeah, I'm kind of there. Except the one that don't really excite me in that way is Oklahoma losing their coach. Right. Lincoln Riley took the job at USC, and do understand that a move like that is somewhat unprecedented. And what is unprecedented about it is people don't leave jobs like Oklahoma for jobs like USC. Like, you might see a situation where a dude maybe has a job like that and then takes a step down ahead of the cavalry, knowing that they're coming for him. Like, I can think of more examples of that in basketball, but you see that kind of thing happen there. What you don't really see is people going from one college football power to another college football power. You're welcome to go look it up. I threw it out there on Twitter and about this a few days ago, and what I realized is some of y'all got some real vague definitions of a power. Like, you talk about, like, Jackie Sherrill going from Pitt to Texas A&M, and I'm like, nah, that's not quite a power. But that's also at a time where the money in coaching wasn't quite what it is right now. And schools couldn't necessarily pony up to keep you in the way that they can do right now. But people just don't typically make moves like this. Like, this is huge. And while so many of us are sitting around wondering, well, damn, who's USC going to hire? As we've seen the market be kind of cool on LSU and, you know, these big jobs that are open. It didn't seem like, you know, there were guys to go get them. USC went and was like, yo, Lincoln Riley, you want to come holler at us? And he was like, yeah, I want to come holler at y'all. And boom, there it is. Now, the reason why I say that it doesn't excite me as a person who roots against Oklahoma is Oklahoma going to get a good coach. Period. We got about 70 years of history to indicate this. Like, they really only messed up on one hire on a coach. And that was John Blake. And even John Blake did enough recruiting wise there where 2 years later they could win a national championship. Like, you go look at it for the last 70 years, what Oklahoma has generally done, it doesn't sound like they're going to do it this time, but what Oklahoma has generally done is hired somebody in his 30s who has never been a head coach before and then gone and kicked ass. Look it up. It's all of them, basically. The one coach, or actually two hires were not good. Howard Stellenberg is easy to forget because he was only there for 1 year, right? But that was probably the worst hire of all the hires, and that was the dude that had all the experience in the world, right? OU going to find somebody, and OU is going to win because, damn it, OU is here to win. OU ain't leaving a whole lot of this to chance. Now, I will make this point. You can go through and look at the history of Oklahoma and all the winning they've done in the conferences they've been in, but a significant part of how overwhelming they've been has been the conferences that they've been in. The Big Eight, which was once called Oklahoma and the Seven Dwarves, right? Or then you move on a little, it's like the Big Two and the Little Six. Like you go through on the wiki and look at all those OU teams going 10-1, 11-1, 9-2, 12-1, 12-0, like all of that stuff. And you go look at it and you go see who it was they were playing and what they were ranked at the time. And it typically ain't really the Heat. Like that's not what it is. Oklahoma is now moving to the SEC. Now, they still going to be mad competitive in the SEC. That's something I wouldn't worry about at all. They're still going to be really, really good in the SEC. But it ain't going to be the Big 12. It ain't going to be the Big 8. And I think Lincoln Riley looked around and was like, I just don't want that kind of stress. Like, OU fans are going to have to recalibrate what their concept of success is. Like, it's going to be a lot more 9-win seasons than it used to be. It might be the occasional 7. It's going to be a lot more of those. Like, that's something that I think that they need to know and get a handle on right now. That's going to change. And if I'm Lincoln Riley, I ain't going to lie. I don't think I'm betting on, they'll come around and understand what's going on here. No. I think I might just go ahead and make this decision to go over to USC. Right? That might be my play. I'm not so convinced that OU can't find a better coach, to be perfectly honest. Like, Riley's been good there, don't get me wrong, but you look at the struggles that he's had with his defenses, and I just don't, it ain't like USC just hired Nick Saban, I guess is the point that I'm ultimately making. I don't think that is what happened there. But I do think that this is very, very, very interesting. Very. And so, I was having to talk with my good buddy Joel about this, Joel from Missouri City. And he was talking about, like, can USC be what USC was? And the answer is, of course, to me. I feel like unless there's been something fundamentally to change on the ground underneath USC, then they're going to be all right, right? So there are schools that, like, used to be powers where I'm like, yeah, I don't think you could pull that off again. Nebraska, of course, being a great example of that, right? The whole terrain and everything about the ecosystem of college football change. Nebraska's never going to be what Nebraska used to be. Some things fundamentally changed. They started changing when it went from the Big 8 to the Big 12, which made it harder for them to get certain players in, and then it went from there, right? So I'm not pretending as though you can't fall off in a way. Everything that made USC what USC was is pretty much still there. Like, they just got to get the administration on board and everybody act right in that regard and get themselves aligned. But everything that makes it possible for USC to be great still exists. And Riley, if anything else, he has recruited Southern California very well. In fact, he got 3 dudes out of Southern California that were going to OU that I bet are about to come to USC right now. Like, no. They're going to pop this thing back up. I don't know how this is going to go with the defense. They're going to pop this thing right back up down there. This will be a happier situation for him. This is, like, literally probably the best thing that could happen for college football in general, because now the Pac-12 gets its relevance back again, because the entire model of the Pac-12 is built around the idea that USC will be consistently somewhere between very good and excellent. Like, what we think about that conference has so much to do with what we think about USC. Boom. There it goes. I just realized as I'm saying all these things about USC, I'm doing this and I'm looking at Gabe at the same time. And I guess Gabe ain't really nearly as excited about this Lincoln Riley news as us uninvested parties might be.
I mean, I think I can take a pragmatic approach with it and be happy about it from the strength of the conference. UCLA is still the top basketball school in the conference. So.
you got yourself to hold on to. Now, the thing about Oregon is, if Oregon's winning and USC is down, then Oregon has no way to legitimize itself in the eyes of the public. USC, right or wrong, doesn't really have to legitimize itself in the way that a Oregon or even Washington, they have to demonstrate their worthiness, in the larger national discussion. So, it's going to be a thing. But what do you think about Lincoln Riley being like, hey, just so y'all know, I'm not going to LSU.
Wink, wink.
Right? You're like, oh, wow, Lincoln Riley, he's not going. And the next damn day went to USC. Like, I mean, I told you I wasn't going to LSU. The dude ain't even asked him a question about that. He just wanted to make sure everybody knew he wasn't going to LSU. And you know what that tells me? Because the LSU people really thought he was coming, right? It sounds to me like he was coming. And then USC got on the phone And he was like, okay, I ain't going to LSU. Right? Like, I don't know what the deal is. I don't know what the play is. I had some dude jump in my mention, try to be an asshole, and was like, you say that LSU is a better job than USC, then why did Lincoln Riley go to USC? I don't know. Like, I never thought that Jim Harbaugh would leave the NFL to go to Michigan, right? He had a personal thing with going to Michigan, and so he decided to do it. I still think that the ceiling of success at LSU is higher than the ceiling of success is at USC. Like, you could say the road to the playoff is easier at USC, but having a team that can win two games in it, you're more likely to put together at LSU than I think at USC. But I do think, man, the idea that I'm about to go live this SEC level of stress, whoo, boy. I forget who I was. I saw on Twitter make this point. I thought it was very interesting. And it was that you ain't going to have but so many of the top coaches in America be in one conference. Because there's only room but for so much royalty, right? Room for a king, room for a prince, maybe a duke, but there ain't no earl, right? They can't be no earl of the, I mean, the SEC actually has lots of earls in the stands, but they can't be no earl of the SEC. You know, there can only be but so many of those guys because you can't stay being that guy finishing third in your division. It just can't be that. And so what you weren't going to have in all likelihood was the SEC just being stacked with Kirby and with Saban and go up and down the line. Like, you go up, you know, like Jimbo Fisher is a tier below those other guys, I would argue, for example, right? But you go up and down the SEC right now, it ain't, I mean, there are good coaches, but it's not like it's but so many star coaches in the SEC right now, right? Just go school by school. It's not there. You ain't going to have so many of them concentrated in the same place. And so with the prospect of Oklahoma going to the SEC, one of those coaches was like, nah, I'm going to go play this another way. I'm going to go over to this other side. And then you look at the Pac-12 and look who the coaches are in the Pac-12, right? I mean, Lincoln Riley, not a perfect coach, but certainly a very good one and an accomplished one. Pac-12's got, like, I think, those good coaches that you don't think about that much. Like Kyle Whittingham would be an example of that one. David Shaw, even though things aren't going great at Stanford right now, you can't be a bad coach and win as much at Stanford as he managed to. Justin Wilcox, another dude that fits that list. I don't know what to say about Chip Kelly in terms of describing him as a good coach or a not good coach, but you know what I mean? Like, they got that tier of guys. And then the upper level there, Cristobal, and now Lincoln Riley. Like, that's where you go. These things are going to spread themselves out. But, man, it's just going to be a wild, wild rock'em sock'em robots world in college football here for a little while. Like, this is one of the more shocking moves, really, that I can believe that I've seen. And then Bob Stoops is going to come be the interim coach. And then I bet he go and try to hire his brother, which wouldn't be the worst idea unless he bring back Mike. Oh, you fans just got mad right now. Hear me say that. Like, oh, he can't bring back Mike. Gabe, he got a brother defensive coordinator who kind of stinks, but it's his brother.
Wasn't he the coach of Arizona at one point?
Yes, he was the coach at Arizona. He left OU and he went to Arizona. And then when Stoops retired, he stuck Lincoln with him until finally they had to fire him. I think it was after they lost to Texas. It was just so bad that they just, like, finally had to fire him. But it's like, how you make me do this in the first? Hey, my brother. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, what are you talking about? Anyway, also, shout out to you, LSU. As I imagine, this has all had to be very humbling. Very, very humbling for you in this circumstance and situation. Like, somebody, I think Stu Mandel made the point, like, what was the point of firing these coaches in season if you still didn't have your coach ready to hire right now? And I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what happened there. That's a job. Like, everything else is a job. And a job can very often be like school. And it's like, they had the syllabus all semester. And then they looked up and they was like, what you mean the semester end next Friday? I haven't even started this paper. I mean, I got a topic. But, like, oh, damn, what we gonna do? It sounded like USC just got on the phone on Saturday. It was like, so what do you want? You tell us that. We'll fix the rest. Now, OU, they whole recruiting class sound like it's going right where it was. You know what I'm saying? They going right with Lincoln. Damn. Now, that part fun. That part right there. Look, man, they spoiled as hell. Other than that little blip of time that they had in the 90s where they weren't good, the only people I feel like more spoiled than OU football fans are North Carolina basketball fans. Like, they don't know what to do with the, like, 8-4 that everybody gets that some people are very happy with. They have no idea what to do with an 8-4. None. They're like, how's this supposed to feel? They look at an 8-4 the way people look at ties. Like, I mean, I guess we didn't lose everything, but like, this doesn't feel like a win. What exactly have we accomplished? Oh, well, you might have some in the next couple of years, and that will bring me joy. All right. Do we know what exactly it is that Enes Kanter is doing right now? And I want to be careful in the way that I talk about him, because, like, you know, that man got a lot going on. Like, let's get that straight and understood right now. That man has a lot going on. He is literally an enemy of the state in his homeland. Okay. I can't speak to what the struggles are that he's got. And I give him credit on the sense that he's appeared to stand tall in the face of that. You know, like, that's not a man I get to judge, but so much, at least in terms of like his constitution and who he is. But what he out here doing? Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, is a completely different discussion that I think absolutely affords me the right to, at the very least, question, what are you doing? Okay. So you may have seen the thing a few days ago, but he came out with the shoes that had like the caricature of LeBron James and was basically getting on LeBron James for working with Nike. And Nike and their relationship with China and China and their treatments of various people. And this did not offend me personally, but I will tell you that I had multiple people hit me up and raise the question about the caricature on the shoes and like what exactly it was that he was going for. Because one thing I can absolutely tell you, man, this is real talk. And I'm here to let all of y'all know this, man. You can't trust white people to draw black people. The chances of it going over a line are always there, always, you know what I mean? And you, the person looking at it, you might not be, I'm just telling you this, generally be careful. But he's like coming directly at LeBron about this China thing while he's hooping with a Nike swoosh on his jersey, right? And so I'm not even getting on him on some idea that he himself personally is being hypocritical, because I do think that there's a difference between Enes Kanter being an NBA player and wearing the jersey that has been assigned to him. I do think that that is different than LeBron James being the face of Nike. You know, like Enes Kanter didn't ask to wear the Nike jersey. That's how it works. I do think that there is a difference. However, the NBA has this relationship with Nike. You can go in that direction. The NBA obviously has a relationship with China. You can go in that direction. The direction he's gone in instead has been at LeBron. And so both he and LeBron had the thing where, you know, LeBron's like, he saw me, he didn't say a word. Kanter's like, he saw me, he didn't say a word, right? Like, it's devolving into that, you know, kind of childish place when it comes to that. But Gabe, you correct me if I'm wrong, but Enes Kanter has a problem with the president of Turkey, or more accurately, the president of Turkey has a problem with Kanter. Right? Has a problem with his family, all of this stuff. Got it. President of Turkey is an ally of Donald Trump. Right? Like, Trump likes guys with the get down of the Turkish president. I just saw a picture the other day of Enes Kanter with Jared Kushner. Right? Like, it's a legitimately fair question to ask. What's going on here? Now, to be fair to Kanter, it is entirely possible that he's working with Kushner and all those people to try to like look out for his people, to look out for himself. They got the ear of the guy that is antagonizing them, right? Like, maybe that's the plan. Maybe that's the program. Maybe that's it. That's entirely possible. I don't know. Again, that man's in a situation that limits what I feel is my room to judge on certain fronts. However, I'm giving Kanter the benefit of the doubt here, right? I'm not saying that it's right to do necessarily, but for argumentative purposes, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. The decision to go at LeBron James is not going to accomplish anything in terms of change or awareness. It's just not going to happen. Like, you're not going to be the messenger to start that discussion about LeBron, and that discussion has already been out there. Like, it's not a new one. Enes Kanter is not going to really bring it to the forefront. But something that should be noted and has to be noted is what a flashpoint LeBron's name is with people on the right and with bots on the right. Like, go look how quick and easy it is for the people that got like 250,000 followers and they themselves follow 175,000 people. Go see how quick those people are the ones that have LeBron's name in their mouth to talk about this. You get out here and talk about these things, look how quick them class of 2021 Twitter accounts pop up to talk about the LeBron stuff. Like, a decision has been made on the far right side of the aisle to use LeBron as a prop, basically, right? To use him as a person, I think, not even to actually bring any legitimate sort of awareness to what's going on in China or anything like that. But I honestly believe just to sow chaos and wreak havoc, just to make people argue with each other, just to have people going back and forth. That's all it is. And so Kanter, although I guess I can't call him Enes Kanter anymore, he has legally changed his name to Enes Kanter Freedom. And so it says Freedom on the back of his jersey. That's why I'm asking this dude, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Like, that's why I'm raising this question. So when Meta World Peace did that, Ron Artest changed his name to Meta World Peace, people laughed at it. Because you know what else he did at the same time? He changed his jersey number to 37 because that's how many weeks in a row Thriller was the number one album. You know what I mean? Nobody took that seriously. When Lloyd Free changed his name to World Be Free, people just kind of thought that was funny. I don't think people took those as like real like social stands. They weren't like influential things. You almost make yourself in some ways the guy who changes his number to 99. You know, like that feels kind of like the place that he winds up in. And so I just really want to know for Kanter, what is it that you are doing, right? And important to note here, you know, I never know whether this is the first time you've ever heard me talk or the last time or anything like that, but it's not like I'm some LeBron James apologist slash defender. It's not. I have lots of criticisms of LeBron and his brand of, I don't even want to call it activism because I don't know if that's the appropriate term, but like how he handles these social issues. He absolutely does pick and choose his spots. And I don't hit him with too much judgment for the fact that he picks and chooses his spots, but he does pick and choose his spots. My problem comes very often from those who criticize him for picking and choosing his spots. So those people want to make the argument with LeBron, oh, you want us to care about George Floyd, but you don't care about China. And I'm like, y'all are missing the point. I wanted LeBron to care about Tamir Rice in his backyard of Cleveland. And he didn't do that, but wore the I Can't Breathe t-shirt in Brooklyn. He picks his spots. I understand why he would do things in that way, in that time, when he did them, right? But I'm not coming here now talking about he's picking his spots. You had lots of other opportunities to talk about the fact that he was picking his spots. No, but those people just want to do is discount the fact that LeBron is advocating for Black people. And I do wonder if Enes Kanter realizes that the approach that he is taking is one that is going to be used more than anything to invalidate LeBron's visibility and causes that support Black people. That's what you are doing. And that is something that I wonder if you are being used to do. You know, who's helping you make these decisions? Who's behind you? Who are your allies? Who are you talking to? Who is advising you? And I'm also very curious, and this, again, not a judgment of Kanter, but like legitimately curious, like how's it going in the locker room with this stuff? I don't mean like how are your teammates treating you? I mean, are you speaking with them about these issues? Have you, you know, are there discussions that are coming up? And again, I'm not asking that rhetorically. I legitimately want to know, because what I don't want to do is ever be the guy that's telling somebody like Kanter to shut up and dribble, because I'm not, right? And I ain't going to be the guy that come out here looking at a cat like Kanter. Oh, so what are you actually doing, right? I want some meaningful change, right? I ain't doing none of that. I ain't saying any of those things. I just don't understand what the dude is doing right now. I just don't understand what he thinks he's going to accomplish and what he thinks he's going to accomplish. I don't. And so is anybody in a position to like ask him these questions? Is he in a position to explain the answers to these questions? Because right now, when you do the name change thing, you just look like a dude on an attention grab. Like, that's what it seems like. And if you want the attention, that's fine. I just don't know what you're doing with it. Like, once you get it, where is it going? And so I hope for his own sake that my man's got a plan. I hope that he's got a strategy. I hope he's got a direction that he wants to take this in. Otherwise, you're just going to have a whole lot of people looking back at you with a skepticism that, given the pattern of actions and behaviors, you 100% deserve. If you haven't heard, as part of ESPN Nation, brought to you by Dr. Pepper, college football is back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from business.
I'm Jenny Gross, a New York Times reporter based in London. And for the New York Times, we wrote about the opening of Popeyes in London. It was a much hyped event. There were hundreds of people there on opening day to try their very own chicken sandwich for themselves. And most of the people in line were British. They had never tried Popeyes before, but of course they had heard about it through references in popular culture and rap songs, for example. And I think, you know, people were pretty excited and pleased with the sandwich once they had tried it for themselves. They said it had lived up to their very high expectations. The one hilarious thing that people were confused about was the Popeyes biscuits, because in the UK, a biscuit refers to a cookie. And so people are saying, what? You're giving me a cookie to eat with a chicken sandwich? I don't understand. Why would I have a scone with a chicken sandwich? But people, I think, were generally pretty happy. They liked it and they said they understood it. And I actually asked the CEO of Popeyes UK about this. And he said that they knew this was going to be a problem because in focus groups, people had said that they, you know, were a little bit confused by the concept of a biscuit. But they decided to go through it anyway because they wanted the menu to stay true to its Louisiana roots. So all in all, I think it was a very successful opening, and Popeyes is expanding to 10 to 15 more locations in the UK in the next year.
All right, so here's what I want to know, Gabe. You know, our British brothers and sisters don't like a lot of adventure in their food. They don't like a lot of excitement. And by excitement, I mean seasoning.
Well, so that is with traditional British food, right? Mm-hmm. But one thing that England does have a lot of is Indian food.
That is true.
Which is quite adventurous. So it seems as though on occasion they could be persuaded to be adventurous, but only on occasion.
Yeah, and that right there, that's what I'm wondering. You know what I'm saying? Like, how many people got their first taste of the Popeyes three-piece spicy, and they standing outside the store with their hands on their knees like, you guys don't serve milk? Anybody got no milk? We need milk. That's where I am right there. And then what I want is for these wonderful Brits to enjoy the Popeyes, and then somebody falls so in love with it that they decide to make a pilgrimage to New Orleans to go to the original. And so they go to that Popeyes on Canal and be like, oh no, it's a whole nother world over here, baby. A whole nother world.
All right, the second story comes from Tech.
Hi, I'm Emma Roth, and I'm with The Verge. Spotify has stopped shuffling albums by default following a request from Adele. Before the update, you might recall seeing a small shuffle icon within the larger play button when viewing an album. This indicated that Spotify would begin playing the songs in a random order, whether you wanted it to or not. But now, if you're a premium user and you hit play in album view, the songs will actually play in their intended order, and we have Adele to thank for that. However, you can still enable shuffle mode by toggling on the shuffle icon when viewing an individual track. Shortly after Spotify made the change, Adele thanked Spotify on Twitter and explained that she thinks all albums tell a story and should be listened to in a specific order. Spotify later replied to Adele's tweet saying, "Anything for you," which suggests that the move is a favor. The change came just days after the release of Adele's new album, 30, which has already gone on to break records. One song, Easy on Me, holds the Spotify record for the most global listens in a single day, a title previously held by K-pop group BTS's Butter.
All right, so basically, and I guess I haven't seen this explicitly, but it feels like that shuffle thing was a chart, like to juke the charts, juke the stats, right? Get more plays on other tracks because people might not be going down to track 8, right? So this is a way to maybe they go ahead and do that or whatever. And this whole streaming thing to me has made the charts like wild useless. And I guess what it really is exposed, though, is basically prior to the SoundScan era and now in this period after the SoundScan era, the charts were just there. You know, like the charts were developed back in the day just by people calling record stores and asking what they were moving. Like there were no numbers. And the SoundScan allowed them to be far more precise and sophisticated about those things. And now with this, man, and, you know, and don't forget that there was the point where record companies are going and buying albums at cost. And billing the artists for them in order to make sure that they wound up shooting up the charts and stuff like that. Like it's all that playing those games. But I had noticed, or at the very least, I guess seen is the word I'd use. I had seen the shuffle thing on Spotify, but I never used it. I would just always press the first track and just go in because I would see the shuffle logo icon on it and be like, yeah, I don't want to do that. Why is that the default? It always seemed odd. It's wild, though, that all Adele's got to say is changing. And they're like, okay, Adele. You know why? Because you ain't allowed to not like Adele. Adele, in some ways, though they are completely different in some ways, obviously, she liked the new Sade. You ever heard anybody be like, yo, Sade ain't really my bag? You ain't never heard nobody say anything like that. In fact, you get out here and say anything halfway, not over the top, complimentary of Sade, it's people going to run up on you. It's happened. Trust me. I know this. You've never heard anybody have a negative opinion of Sade. Get on the internet and say something bad about Adele. Just be like, yo, I thought the album was mid. Because you might have. I don't know. I ain't listened to it yet. I don't do recreational sadness, as you know. Somebody might come out here and say that record mid. It'll be a long day for them, boy. A long day. So the last thing they wanted to have to do was come out. Adele asked for something. We said no. Nah, man. You don't want that.
All right, so this last story, reporter couldn't join us with the holiday and all that sort of stuff. Thought it was still an interesting story to talk about for you. So a lot of the bigger tech companies that deal with smart speakers and so on are making more investment, getting more involved with making their home devices pick up business applications such that people can do work-related tasks via their smart speaker. And there are lots of concerns that come with that, the kind of like boundary in between work and personal life, but then a lot of also privacy concerns and just more opportunities to get hacked. Interested in your thoughts about it.
So this is kind of my question about like smart speaker world and all of that stuff. Does it really make your life that much easier? Because we're obviously making trades in order to do this, right? And all these concerns and things that you talk about here. I just don't feel like it's that hard for me to do stuff as it is. Between this phone and everything else, I feel like everything is really a breeze. I think people just like the idea of being to be like, Alexa, da-da-da, right? Like, it's a real Jetsons-like quality to it, and it makes people feel like they're in the future. But I've never heard anybody, even the people that have those smart speakers, rave about them. Like, they say they'll like them, right? And they'll put them to use. But I've never heard anybody be like, dude, this thing has just completely and totally changed my life. I haven't come across that person. But people keep signing up for these things. And with every reason there is to be skeptical about what they're ultimately doing with the stuff that they give you, right? Every single bit of it. Y'all still do it. Y'all still buy it. And they're like, yo, how about we do something else that may seem to make your life more convenient, but is going to infringe upon your privacy? Psh,
man, I don't care if y'all know all my business.
What? And we just keep signing up for all of this stuff, man. And like, it's just, I just want the person to tell me who they are that they just can't live without Alexa. I'm very curious. I've just never met that person before.
When you see your parents, are they walking around with their cell phone at all times?
My mother is not. She is liberated from the leash in a way that I at once envy and also find ridiculously annoying. My father has his phone a lot, but that's because he's reading stuff a lot. You know what I mean? Like, it's like for him, he's a nerd in that sense. And so for him, it's access to all the things in the world to read. And so he's got it to read. I wouldn't say that he's like cell phone addicted in that way. Like if you put that same stack next to him and it was just all books, he'd be reading all books.
Because I was just thinking, like, for someone like you or I, we're not entertained by the possibility of using an Alexa like that because we've always got our phone with us. So we can just use it. If we have a question, we ask.
Gotcha.
Right? We don't necessarily need the HomePod or any this or that or the other. I feel like I still see a lot of older people also glued to their phones. So then it like begs the question of, are the people that are most into the HomePod and all these sorts of things, people who don't want to be carrying their phone around? when you see how many people are glued to their phone, it doesn't seem like that many people that are just like, ah, you know what? I don't need my phone. I got this Alexa right here, you know?
Right, right. I got a watch. I don't need that. Nah, you don't see that. You're right.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
Hope you had a nice holiday, a nice Thanksgiving holiday with your family.
I did indeed.
Now that we're back, thought it might be a good time to reach out to the fan base, reach out to the listeners, and ask them about times that they had with their family that they realized maybe they had some beef. This first one's interesting. It doesn't actually happen at Thanksgiving, but certainly affected the holiday. My man didn't leave his name, but he's from New York.
What up, Bo? This story has Thanksgiving repercussions. So about a couple months ago, I go down to Atlanta to spend some time with my cousin. Say I'm celebrating my 30th birthday, and I wanted to spend it with my cousin because, you know, it means a lot to me. So I bring my family down there, sit with his family, have a good time. So little backstory. Here in New York, I go to my uncle's house frequently. Me, my uncle, and cousin from a different aunt have a great relationship. Every time I go over to my uncle's house, he always asks me about my cousin. Hey, oh, how your cousin Curtis doing? I say, oh, Curtis is good. You know, Curtis don't talk to me no more, right? I say, that happened about 2 years. I say, why is that? I say, well, because Curtis ain't got no job, and I keep telling Curtis to go out and get a job. And stop trying to play that good talk. My uncle been saying that for probably 2 years. And I ain't said nothing. I'm just like, oh, dang, for real? So I go down to Atlanta with my family. And we in the car. And my cousin Curtis is telling me, man, you know what? I just got a new job. And, you know, I'm congratulating him. I say, well, golly, Curtis, congratulations, man. Now we don't got to, you ain't got to hear nothing from that old Uncle Jim about how you ain't got no job. Okay, support your family, all that stuff. Man, that old Uncle Jim, he a wild one, ain't he? He said, wait, what? And at that moment, Bo, man, I knew my big-ass mouth had gotten me in some real trouble. I said, wait, you ain't been talking to old Uncle Jim? You ain't never? Nah, he ain't never said that to me. Well, Curtis said to me that he was going to send a letter to our uncle, and I'll just leave it at this. He sent that letter, and my phone rang off the hook, and me, my family, and Curtis's family, we ain't got nowhere to go this Thanksgiving because we usually spend it with Uncle Jim.
Damn, he blew up the whole family just like that.
It was as if it was something that had already been said. So for him to bring it up didn't sound like it was something that was going to blow up the spot.
Right, right. Like he figured if he telling you, he telling everybody. My bad, dog.
Yeah, he's having a Friendsgiving this past year then. All right, this next one comes from Corday. He's in the Bay. Here it is.
First time I realized that my family didn't rock with everybody was my... I had an aunt who was like a great aunt who was like one of the matriarchs of our family, right? And I remember she would always come and say, hey, baby, how you doing? I was like, I'm doing good, auntie. Okay, all right, cool. Come over here, give me a hug, baby. Hold up, who's that coming in? I was like, I think that's such and such. Where's my purse? Can you go grab my purse? Now I'm gonna go do this. I said, go grab my purse. Go grab my purse. So I had to go grab her purse because one of my uncles was coming in. But the funniest part is when she had enough with one of my aunties, like, her sister's daughter was like, you know what? Every Thanksgiving, you come in here, and all I see is your feet propped up underneath the table. You don't bring nothing. You don't bless the food. You don't do nothing. You only put your feet underneath the table. No, she was like, no, it's time I brought some juices. Where'd you get them juices from? The dollar store? I was like, oh, snap. She was like, next time bring something more than just some juices. Because you bring juices, you bring two juices, but take three plates home. Don't think I ain't see you. Don't think I ain't see you. That's my story. That's why I realized that my great aunt didn't rock with several members of my family.
you bring two juices and take three plates home. Yep. You and Bobby, she had enough of you. I think she still love y'all, though. I think.
The giving of the leftovers, too much, not getting enough, becomes a real point of contention.
It's a tricky midpoint because nobody wants all that food at their house, but they also don't want you thinking you could just take it all. It's just another thing to have beef over. Get ready. What it is about leftovers is what it's going to be when somebody dies and try to figure out who gets to take home what trinket that doesn't really matter.
All right, here's the last one. Kind of a long one, but it's a funny one. Here it is.
Okay, Bo, so it's a couple of Thanksgivings ago. I want to say 2018, right? I'm at my girlfriend's place with her family. She is the youngest of four, but like her, she has a twin, so there's two older siblings. Now, her parents have a standing rule that wherever you get into college, like, they'll take care of that, you know? So, the oldest sibling, she played volleyball, so she got a scholarship. No real need to break any bread for that, you know. The second sibling goes to state school, like a four-year university, but nothing too extravagant. I believe it was like University of Houston. Again, not a huge expense. Now, my girl and her twin, they graduated a year apart because my girl was real sick growing up, so she missed the whole year. Now, she's always kind of had a weird relationship with the twin. Maybe she's, you know, sees, you know, the twin as like she's prettier or, you know, the favorite or whatever. So my girl is finishing up 11th grade. This is before I knew her. And her twin is graduating. And the twin decides she wants to go all the way out to Arizona State. Now, Arizona State's a big party school, this, that, and the other, and, like, it's, you know, out-of-state tuition, plus you got to find an apartment in Tempe, et cetera, et cetera. And this twin did so badly that first year that it made her parents second-guess letting my girl go. So she's got to go to community college for a year. Because her twin screwed up so bad in her states. Now, my girl's really upset about this. It all comes out over Thanksgiving dinner. We had a few drinks. Apparently, the money that is funding all of this college stuff came from, like, their grandparents. So she goes and gets a picture of, like, the dead grandmother. And it's like, is this what you would have wanted? And da-da-da-da-da. I don't know if you've been in a situation when your girl starts, you know, acting up and you just have to back it and you just got to sit there and nod. But man, the most awkward turkey and dressing of my life, and every Thanksgiving after that, man, I'm walking on eggshells.
Hey, man, nothing like that. Yep, I'm on your team. I'm on your team while we're here. And hopefully by the time we leave, we'll be talking about something else so that I don't have to still be on this team. At least not for this game.
Holding up a picture of the dead grandma now?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit much. It's a bit much. Whew. Well, happy Thanksgiving. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this three times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handling everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Jenny Gross of the New York Times. Check out her story on Popeyes coming to London. Also, thanks to Emma Roth of The Verge. Check out her story on Spotify, getting rid of that shuffle play default that they had because of Adele. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. If you only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.